The time is 10 a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, a discussion about space weapons with Bruce Gagnon. Good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your community radio station, KBOO, here in Portland, Oregon, USA. For those of you listening online at KBOO.fm. My name is Andrew Geller, and we're going to be talking today, more giving an update, as we've looked at this topic several times on the program, the issue of space weapons. And we're going to draw a clear distinction here between the idea of space weaponry and the so-called missile defense program that's been, under development and continually failing for the past 20-plus years at this point. And joining me this morning, welcoming him back to the program, I have Bruce Gagnon. He is the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, and I'm very pleased to have you back on the show. Hey, Bruce.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine.
So the issue of space weapons, as I mentioned, is really separate from the issue of missile defense, but there is a lot of crossover, partly due to the fact that systems that can be used defensively oftentimes can also be used offensively, but also because I think there's just general confusion between what systems are used for. And secondly, I think a lot of people don't like the idea of the U.S., say, being, offensive in their military operations, although that may be shifting. Can you just real briefly, for people who don't understand the difference between missile defense and space weapons, just kind of lay that out?
Well, it's our contention that the idea of defense, missile defense, of protecting the continent from an attack. See, the Bush administration is saying Iraq, who turned out not to have any weapons of mass destruction, or Iran, who today has none, or North Korea, who today has none capable of hitting the continental United States. He says these countries are going to attack us, and so we have to have a bullet, hit a bullet in deep space to protect the United States. And so that's so-called missile defense. We believe it's a Trojan horse, that in fact the Pentagon isn't really serious about missile defense. They're just using it as a way to get the American people to fork over hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars so they can build an offensive warfare system in space, because the Pentagon knows that whoever controls space militarily will control the Earth to the benefit of the multinational corporations. And so to go to the American people and say, turn over your national treasury so we can have war in space, people might be reluctant. But if you can scare them and say, we're going to be attacked by the rogue states with nuclear weapons and we have to defend ourselves, so therefore we need missile defense, then people are more inclined to go along with the deal. And so I think that missile defense has never really been a serious notion. because they've always known it wouldn't work. So many different ways that you can overwhelm it, get around it, get underneath it. And so it really could never work. But they're going forward with the program anyway. Bush is actually now deploying the elementary aspects of it at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, in Fort Greely in Alaska. But again, knowing that it won't work, but it's just the Trojan horse.
And in the January 18th issue, 2005, of Defense Daily, a Pentagon spokesperson actually stated regarding the operational capability of the ground-based mid-course missile defense system, which is just detail about that particular type of missile defense program. Quote, "We haven't made a declaration that we are now hereby operational. I don't know that such a declaration will ever be made." Which, if you kind of dissect that, means he's saying it might never, ever
work. Yeah, and just as I say, and they know that. And again, I think the whole thing is just keep your eye on that ball while we're sneaking in the back door with offensive plans for space technology. Because as they overly heavily fund so-called missile defense, they're breaking the money off and developing other technologies to give the United States the ability to destroy other countries' satellites, to hit targets on the Earth from space, all first strike, very important first strike capability. And so some people would say, oh, but the United States would never do such a thing. But now, of course, we know under the Bush administration, preemption, first strike, is official military policy of this government.
Yeah, and the documents that you're referring to primarily, I imagine, are from the U.S. Air Force. And last summer, in fact, August 2nd of 2004, the U.S. Air Force released a new doctrine document called Counter Space Operations,
right,
which, and I'm reading here from an article posted on the Global Network's website, produced by Teresa Hitchens, who we've had on the program before, from the Center for Defense Information. And she says that the Counter Space Operations Doctrine document details the planning and execution of operations against space systems and satellites, both for defensive and offensive purposes. It claims that the U.S. may act preemptively against both enemy military satellites as well as those with primary civilian functions owned by governments or commercial operators. Now, that's a big shift in terms of what it's not so much a big shift, but it's more detail about policies that they, I guess, first revealed when the Air Force put out its Vision 2020 document many years ago. How significant do you feel this new Air Force doctrine document is? Is this a huge thing, or is it kind of a minor modification across a spectrum of issues, and they've just put it all together in one place now?
I think it's the latter. I don't think it's anything dramatically new that they haven't been saying for the past 10 years or so. As you mentioned, in 1997, they came out with a vision for 2020 that, in less detail, in a broader sense, but still spelled out the same thing, that the United States would control space, dominate space, and deny other countries access to space. But this new Air Force doctrine, and doctrine is an important word, because doctrine means more than plan, it means more than idea, it means official implementation, military doctrine, implementation strategy. And so this means that it's now become the official military doctrine, the official implementation strategy to develop this capability. So in that sense, it's more important, but still, it's nothing new. If you go to our website, you'll find right on the homepage four of these plans. One is called Air Force Plans for Transformation of the Future War in Space, the United States Space Command Master Plan for Fiscal Year 2006 and Beyond, and also the Joint Doctrine for Space Operations. And they're all four right on our homepage. Our website is www.spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org.
Now, the counter space operation document is it's sort of a, I guess, progression would be an okay word to use in a certain sense, of the Air Force document Transformation Flight Plan that was released, I guess it was February of 04, about a year ago, maybe a little more than that. That was really sort of a transformation is jargon, very popular jargon within the military world, and current Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld led efforts regarding transformation both before he was Secretary of Defense and still. And just before he was appointed Secretary of Defense, he led a commission that looked at issues related to space transformation of the military. Can you summarize for us what Donald Rumsfeld thought the future role of space would be for the United States military?
Yeah, and this is, I think, the most important point. All warfare today is coordinated by space technology. If you look at this war with Iraq, as we began this war, the shock and awe part of it, when Bush did the invasion, the whole thing was coordinated by 50 military satellites. So every troop, in a plane, in a boat, on a tank, in a Humvee, guys on the ground with laptop computers, all of them hooked up to satellites, and satellites giving them the ability to see the entire battlefield. In the past years, NASA, on secret missions, went in and created new high-resolution three-dimensional maps of the entire Earth's surface, and 90% of the maps were classified top secret and are now being used in Afghanistan and Iraq. And so these new high-resolution three-dimensional maps tied to computers, tied to satellites, give the military the ability to see everything on the Earth. And this is what military transformation is about. They call it jointness. Everything is joined together now. All the services really become one, and they're joined together by the satellite technology. And so whoever then controls space and has that ability to see everything and hear everything and target everything on the Earth controls the planet. And so what Rumsfeld discussed before he became Secretary of Defense, or as I like to say, Secretary of War, what he discussed was, we got to make sure that nobody else can have access to space so that we can win all the wars. And so therefore, we've got to transform our military, transform our operation, transform our technological buys, if you will, so that we begin developing the technologies to deny other countries access to space. And they named this, they call it full-spectrum dominance, that the United States is going to dominate conflict at every level, the ground with our conventional army, the ocean with our navy, the air with our air force, and then space with the space command. And so this is what it's all about. And then beyond that, they're now talking about closing down the bigger bases, like in Europe, and creating new lily pads, small little bases in the regions of the world that they've identified as the gap. The gap is the parts of the world that is not yet submitted to corporate globalization, like the Middle East and Central Africa, parts of Latin America, and Central Asia. All of these places, coincidentally, are the places where there is oil in this world. Diminishing supplies of oil become increasingly important, and whoever controls the oil then controls the global economy. And so part of military transformation now is to develop a new, lighter-weight military that has the ability to move from base to base, from these lily pad bases, jumping around the gap so that the U.S. can suppress any opposition to corporate globalization, to the corporate domination of resources, oil and water, in these parts of the world that is not yet submitted to globalization. And so space technology then comes in handy. It ties it all together, because if you want to move quickly, move and intervene anywhere, you've got to be able to see and effectively deploy troops. And again, space technology becomes the key in all of that. So again, bottom line, the United States says, we can't let anyone else have this military capability. We have to be able to dominate it, the entire space sphere. And the way to do that is with offensive technologies. And so that's going to be very expensive. The Pentagon has said it will be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth to put weapons in space. And so how do you sell that to the American people? Well, scare them, make them think that the rogue states are going to attack us with nuclear weapons, missile defense, and that's how we'll get them to acquiesce to getting rid of Social Security and education and health care and things like that in order to move the money into the Star Wars program. So that's how it all fits together.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. My guest this morning is Bruce Gagnon. He's the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, and you can find out more about them online at www.spaceforpeace.org, and that's the numeral 4 in between space and peace. The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm also has links to the Global Network, as well as many of the planning documents we've been talking about, all kinds of different articles, all sorts of military websites, space news sites, and all sorts of stuff. So go to kboo.fm and scan around for the People Rise Up website to find all that. Just to elaborate a little bit there on something that really shocked me when I read this last night, and it's an old article, well, October of last year, from Wired News, Noah Schachtman, who's written a few really great articles following Pentagon space war planning efforts. Quote, this capacity, and it's referring here specifically to the idea of sensor-to-shooter capacity. When does a sensor notice something that needs, in its, you know, concept, to be shot at, and closing the sensor-to-shooter gap? And of the ground-moving target indicator capability, he writes, this capacity provides U.S. global strike forces with the ability to identify and track moving targets anywhere on the surface of the Earth. And I can only imagine that those classified NASA maps of the entire planet's surface would have something to do with that.
Yeah.
So you brought up differences and gaps between, say, what's called discretionary funding and military funding, just in passing there at the end of your last remarks. And I haven't been able to find any level of detail in the Department of Defense budget proposal, and there may not be any available quite yet. I'm not so sure about that. But just sort of broadly, we know the Department of Defense is getting a budget increase. And I guess the Homeland Security Department is also getting a budgetary increase, and nothing else. So broadly, regarding the Department of Defense budget in general, where do you see, or how do you see funding for these efforts changing over the course of the next year, couple of years, 5 years, et cetera?
You know, the key money right now is going to Iraq, massive amount of money being drained off and going into the coffers of Halliburton and Bechtel. They've lost $9 billion over there in Iraq already, unaccounted for. And so the Pentagon is pumping a lot of money over there. One of the reasons why they're doing this is because they intentionally want to create the deficit crisis that we have, because it gives Bush then the opportunity to say, well, we've got to cut. You know, we've had this huge deficit. And so, well, what are we going to cut? Well, oh, of course, we can't cut the military because we're in a war, but we can cut everything else across the board. And so that's where the social programs now are under massive attack. But within the Pentagon, even they're feeling some constraints because they've got so many things going on. They're so overstretched. And so they're having to shift some money around right now. Last year, the Missile Defense Agency got about $10 billion. And so this year they're going to take about $1 billion from the Missile Defense Agency and move it into other priorities within the Pentagon budget. So that's not much of a cut, considering the fact that they've over-budgeted the Missile Defense Agency for years anyway, largely anticipating that this day would come when they would have to do some cutting back. It looks good, makes it look like, you know, hey, we're cutting back a little bit, but in fact it's still way over budget. They're wasting money like crazy there. So I don't see it as really particularly significant. They're still funding the kinds of programs, research and development programs that they want to be doing All of them have cost overruns. All of them are massively wasting money, as you can imagine. But I don't see it particularly significant that they're taking $1 billion out of the Missile Defense Agency.
Now, something that I'm sure I've read this before, but in reading for this show, I was surprised. A couple of different articles said that the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 actually specifically only bans nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction. And these folks were making the point that many of the types of weapon systems the Pentagon are proposing to put into space actually don't fall under the prohibitions of that treaty.
That's right. They call at the Pentagon. They call, for example, the space-based laser that is now under development, orbiting battle stations, firing lasers powered with nuclear reactors. By the way, this is the plan. They call these weapons of selective destruction, not of mass destruction,
because it
so therefore
discriminates.
They would fall outside of that 1967 treaty. And so that's why at the UN for some years, Russia and China and Canada have been leading an effort to expand the definitions or broaden that 1967 treaty to include new space technologies, new weapon systems. But the United States has been blocking the real development of a new treaty at the UN.
Now, we're just slightly late on this one because the deadline was January 31st, but the Department of Energy had an environmental impact statement available for comment regarding the expansion of nuclear power in space, which not only relates to space exploration programs, but military applications. Can you summarize what that was about is still about?
First, I want to compliment you on how much you stay up to date on all this. I'm very impressed. The Department of Energy is now getting ready to dramatically expand its production of plutonium-238, the most toxic substance ever created for space technology. So they're beginning to move towards expanding their infrastructure so they can produce more plutonium for space, because they say the demand is growing. All kinds of things they want to use it for: nuclear rockets, nuclear-powered mining colonies on the moon and Mars, and ultimately to power weapons in space. And so in order to expand their facilities, they have to do an environmental impact statement. So they've just asked for public comment. They're talking about going to Idaho Falls, Idaho, and taking the Department of Energy facility there and dramatically expanding the facilities so they can produce more plutonium in the coming years, all of which they say would be used for space missions. And so we tried to organize as many people as possible during that public comment period to write opposing the use of nuclear power in space for any reason, because we think, obviously, when rockets have 10 to 25% failure rates when they're launched, and you start putting plutonium on board increasingly, you're asking for trouble. In addition, we don't want to see nuclear power used to power weapons in space, because just think of the Columbia shuttle mission 2 years ago, fell back in February, fell back to Earth, burned up on reentry. And you remember it spread its debris over Louisiana and Texas. Mm-hmm. And imagine if that was a nuclear reactor that had fallen out of orbit and burned up on reentry and spread deadly plutonium as dust across several states or several countries. We'd have a massive environmental disaster on our hands. And so not only would the introduction of nuclear power into space be destabilizing, creating a new arms race, it would also be an environmental mess.
Well, and unfortunately, it wouldn't have been the first time that that would have happened. In seeing that we've just got a few minutes left here, I want to make mention of a conference that you folks are hosting in New York City the last weekend in April, 29th and 30th. It's called Full Spectrum Resistance, an international space organizing conference. Can you just explain, why people might want to attend and what will be going on and what you hope to get out of it?
Well, every year we hold an international conference in a different part of the world because our organization is made up of affiliate groups, over 150 of them all over the world. There's quite a growing movement around the world in opposition to the U.S. plans for Star Wars. And it's coming out of the fact that the United States is putting bases, Star Wars satellite receiving stations all over the planet. And it's drawing people in their countries. And they're saying, hey, we don't want to be part of Star Wars. We don't want you to use our country as a base to make this thing work. And so every year we bring these activists together from around the world. Well, this year we're going to meet in New York the day before a huge demonstration that's being planned on May 1st in Central Park in New York City around the whole issue of nuclear weapons. The Non-Proliferation Treaty Review Conference is going to be held at the UN beginning in May, and so people are coming from all over the world for that. And so our conference is going to be held the day before all those activities start to take advantage of the fact that a lot of people are coming for the nuclear meetings. And there's a real link here, because countries are saying, look, if you're going to put Star Wars up there in the United States, if you're going to put weapons in space, our only option is to build more nuclear weapons, to overwhelm that system so that you don't have a first strike advantage. And so if we want to end other countries, if we want to stop other countries from building nuclear weapons, then we have to look at the United States plans for Star Wars, because the more we move into Star Wars, the more countries are going to say, look, we're going to have to build more nuclear weapons because it's our only way of dealing with this first strike capability that the United States is creating. And so that's why our conference is so important.
Just real quickly, does this come up much in international meetings? I mean, like Condoleezza Rice was just traipsing around Europe and the Middle East, and I know it's not necessarily focused on either of those areas, but I mean, like, Europe's probably fairly upset about this, or I know that they are. And how much does this actually get brought up in sort of those formal settings?
I think it gets brought up a lot more privately, and it's not really covered in a big way by the media. Although, just a couple months ago, Bush went to Canada for some meetings, and it was the number one issue of his visit. Canada's participation in Star Wars. The United States is twisting Canada's arm, trying to force them to get in on this Star Wars plan. It's going to be so expensive, we're trying to force the allies to get in to help pay for it, have them cut their National Health Service, have them cut Social Security, education, move the money into Star Wars. And so it is being discussed oftentimes in a lot of places. But in our country, our media doesn't tell us a lot of things that are going on around the world.
Very true, and we'll just have to leave it there. My guest this morning has been Bruce Gagnon. He's the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. We've been talking about primarily U.S. offensive plans for space weaponry so they can employ full-spectrum dominance across the world. You can find out more about them online at www.spaceforpeace.org, and that's the numeral 4 in there. Thank you very much for being with us again on the program, Bruce.
And thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
And off he goes. And again, the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has a whole bunch of links related to most things that we talked about here this morning. The Kyoto Protocol takes effect 1 week from today, and we'll probably be doing something climate-related, though I don't know with who and exactly what angle yet. If you have any questions or comments about anything you heard on this or any other show, you can send me an email at kboo@riseup.net. And I just also want to announce that MP3s of many shows will now be available at the People Rise Up website. There's an archive link at the top and individual show links next to the date. And I also need to let you know that this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and by the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media, and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information is available at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org.